Today, October the 16th, is World Food Day, and the theme chosen for this year's celebration is Investment in Agriculture for Food Security. During a ceremony to mark World Food Day at the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, the FAO Director General Jacques Duff warned that only investment in agriculture will turn around the current situation where more than 150 million people around the world remain undernourished. A message from Pope Benedict XVI was read at today's ceremony by Monsignor Renato Volante, the Holy See's permanent observer at the FAO. In the message, the Pope spoke of the Church's wholehearted support for the ongoing efforts to lessen the scourge of global hunger. World Food Day also saw the global launch by FAO's Right to Food unit of a youth education initiative. Julian Thomas served for the past 3 years as coordinator of the FAO Right to Food unit, which drew up guidelines for countries wishing to implement this radical new approach to development. My colleague Philippa Hitchin asked him whether the right to food is a right that is recognised by every country.
Well, not every country, but most countries, yes. The right of food is recognised in different international agreements, but mainly in the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, to which 153 countries have adhered, have ratified, in fact. So one can say the majority of countries, yes. It's existed for some time. There is this international obligation, but the question has been posed for a number of years, and particularly and in a natural way at FAO, given the focus on agriculture, what does this right actually mean in practice?
Of course, the right to be free from hunger was originally recognised in the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, wasn't it, way back in 1948?
Correct. That has evolved since then, or the interpretation has evolved since then, and it was again expressed in the pact. Well, it's the Covenant on Economic, Social, Cultural Rights, and only taken up again in, I'd say, the late 70s and 80s. There's a bit of a political connotation here, because it was one of the economic and social and cultural rights that, let's say, politically speaking, was championed more by the totalitarian states during the 60s, 70s, even into the 80s. And it's only after the dissolution of the Berlin Wall, really, and the defreeze international and in the political scene, that the more democratic countries have paid an interest in this economic, social, cultural rights, whereas in the past they focused more on political and civil rights.
So we're talking about it as a political issue these days. That really means, is the government itself responsible for feeding its people, or are other countries held responsible also for feeding in a case where a country can't afford to feed its own people?
Right. The main idea, and it certainly is a political issue, it's a political decision, the main responsibility lies with the state. This international right refers to the obligation of the state to care for its own citizens. And the question of international responsibility is a lot less clearly defined and a lot less clear. So the guidelines focus essentially, although there is a mention of international rights, they focus essentially on the rights and the obligations of governments. Now, one of the main misconceptions, the one of the ways in this right is misunderstood, is that it is the obligation of the government to feed its people, and that's not the case at all. Of course, in all countries, rich and poor, there is a category of people that are incapable of looking after themselves. And in those cases, countries, governments do have obligations to have safety nets, whatever nature, to help feed these people. But the main thrust, the main meaning of the right to food is that government should create an economic environment in which people are capable of feeding themselves, and not directly necessary producing food to feed themselves, but having access to resources, in that case, both natural resources and know-how, and to be able to feed themselves. But beyond that as well, because the right to food applies to all citizens, also the question of employment, for example, access to employment. So access to means, whether it's direct or indirect, of feeding oneself. And this is the policy environment that governments need to examine to see the extent to which it favours or disfavours achieving the right to food.
Now, these are lofty ideals, but take, for example, countries which are regularly hit by famines, by disaster, natural disasters, situations in which they find it very difficult to provide for their people.
Yes. I think a concept that needs to be introduced also that's inherent to this right is the progressive realization within the means of a country. Countries with greater means, more would be expected of them. But a country, even the poorest country, can adopt a stance, can adopt an approach that is favorable to achieving a state whereby the majority of their citizens can feed themselves. So, you do get, and that would be one, that is one aspect that is dealt with in the guidelines. You do get countries that are confronted by crises, whether the result of displaced people, war in a neighboring country, natural disasters, for example. These are major contributors to hunger and deprivation in many countries, but the underlying challenge is far more one of reducing the level of malnutrition and poverty at national level, over and above, and or at the same time as putting mechanisms in place to cope with these natural or man-made disasters.
Now, these guidelines, as you say, governments have signed up to them, and yet we're still a long way off achieving these ideals, aren't we? Just give us an overall picture, if you would, of still the existing situation of hunger today.
Right. Well, the figure that is usually thrown around, and this, of course, is an estimate, but I think we are at the moment of 853 million people in the world who are at that level of being malnourished or undernourished. The majority in developing countries, but not all. There's a large number of people who are malnourished and undernourished in developed countries as well, and one tends to forget this.
It seems difficult for us to understand why a government would be against the idea of agreeing to try and feed all its people.
Yes, I think, you know, governments are run by politicians. Politicians are very practical people, and I think they're very concerned about exposing themselves to extra risks or undue risks, and they may be concerned, for example, about this misinterpretation that the majority of the inhabitants may suddenly interpret this right to food as the government having to feed them now. And one can see that there's a whole process of education and awareness raising that has to take place if this right is going to be approached in a constructive manner, both by government but both by and by civil society as well, that unrealistic expectations aren't put in place and unrealistic demands, as it were, aren't made either. So it's really a deal, a pact that has to be arrived at between civil society and government if this process is going to move forward smoothly, and this is perhaps what governments are a little bit nervous about.
That was Julian Thomas of the UN Food and Agricultural Organization speaking to Philippa Hitchin.